Hello, everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and it's time. It's time for It's All About Food. I was just thinking about time and how we got an extra day on February 29th, leap year. Bing, bing, bing. That's a musical leaping for you. And I was just thinking how silly our calendars are. And they're helpful, aren't they? But as some spiritual guides once told me in their way of communicating, there is no time. Even though it's time right now for It's All About Food, whatever that means. I'm glad you're here joining me. And we're going to be tuning in so much love in this hour. So thanks for being there to share in this information. And speaking of sharing, you know, I hope that you share this program with other people. I do this for the love of it. I do it because there's so much information out there that needs to be shared. And I'm sharing it with you, and I hope you share it with others. We have this incredible digital library that's exploding at responsibleeating.com of 7 years almost worth of. I'm going to be celebrating my 7th year of this program at the end of the month. I just realized that. And we've got all of the programs from all 7 years, most of them transcribed for you to check out and review. I like to say that. Even though some of the programs are 6 years old, 7 years old, fortunately, unfortunately, the material is still quite valid. There are many people out there that haven't heard the latest and greatest, like many of you have. So it's all really valuable, and it's all worth sharing. Great. You know, I just came back from Costa Rica. I missed my show last week because I was out in the jungle. And it's always amazing. Travel is so amazing. We can learn so much about ourselves, our culture, by seeing other civilizations, other cultures, other peoples. And I find the contrast is so amazing when I go to Costa Rica, not just contrast with the United States, but contrast within that country itself, because I spend some time in their cities of San Jose and San Isidro, and then I head out into the jungle and spend some time there. I stay on a friend's farm. It's just, it's profound, and I always learn so much, and it always gives me so much pause. But what I really love about it is being out in nature. It's so stunningly beautiful, and instantly I can de-stress and relax and feel that feeling that there really is no time. At least the time is marked by the sun rising and sun setting. I typically wake up at 4 in the morning when I'm there, and I go to bed at 8 o'clock because I stay in these open-air places, and you really don't want to have the electricity on at night because the bugs come in. And it's a beautiful thing to let nature kind of form your days. Anyway, I'm back in New York, and I'll be talking more about my experiences there because I'm sure there'll be lots of things that will be reminding me of that experience. But meanwhile, if you haven't been to the What Vegans Eat daily blog that I put up at responsibleeatingandliving.com, you can see my past week in Costa Rica in terms of the foods that I was eating while I was there. And there's some other nice, pretty pictures that I put up on the blog as well. Let me know what you think. I'm at info@realmeals.org, and I always want to hear from you. Cool, let's move on. My first guest is D. Anthony Evans. And he knows what it takes to face down life's biggest challenges and beat them. A child of a single mom, he was born with neurofibromatosis, a rare genetic condition where dangerous tumors grow on nerve tissue. Often benign, they can become malignant, resulting in malignant peripheral nerve sheath tumors, an aggressive form of cancer. And in 2012, Dee was diagnosed with this aggressive form of cancer, 9 life or death surgeries, risking paralysis within 11 months followed as doctors removed 325 tumors, one of them over 2 pounds. He was given 6 months to live. Survival rates are low, but there are those who survive. It has been over 4 years. Congratulations, D. Anthony Evans, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for having me, Karen. It is truly an honor and a blessing. Thank you.
I agree, and I'm glad you're alive. And We only have a short amount of time on this program, and there's so much to learn from you and be inspired from. You have this incredible essence for life, and I wish we could bottle it and share it with people.
It's just, you know, when you go through what I've been through, and this is one of my quotes that I hold dear to my heart, like, I never thought that facing death would show me how to live, meaning that I don't even think I was living until my life was on the line. Because now when I get up, it's about air and oxygen and love and light and the things that I took for granted. So I'm not bitter by any stretch of the imagination. This was kind of the best thing that ever happened to me in some type of weird way. And I'm just blessed and encouraged to be alive, Karen. I really am.
I'm going to say that I agree. That is a kind of a weird way. You know, we haven't really talked, but I think you know that I'm a survivor of advanced ovarian cancer. I'm not going to say I'm glad it happened to me. I'm not. I don't wish that kind of thing on anybody.
Well, I congratulate you on you didn't survive. You're clearly thriving. There's a difference. You are a thriver. So congratulations on that note.
Thank you. So anyway, you have survived not only an aggressive form of cancer, but you've survived all kinds of challenges in life. And maybe you can just give us a little brief summary of that.
Okay. So, as you said, I was born with neurofibromatosis, again, which is a rare neurological disorder that causes tumors to spontaneously form on your peripheral nerves anywhere in your body without notice. Most NF patients are on a number of medications, but I kind of found my solace in my way of dealing with the pain through fitness and exercise. This is at a young age. And it really made sense to me when I was about 8 of what I really had. I knew I had tumors. We used to call them birthmarks, and then the doctor made it very clear what my condition meant to me. To be perfectly honest, for 35 years, it was my secret. People that have known me my entire life did not know that I was fighting a disease that's basically the conduit for cancer. I had this amazing basketball career ahead of me. Been jumping roughly 5 feet since I was in seventh grade.
Wow.
Everybody that's from where I'm from knew if I stayed out of trouble, kept my grades up, and kept working at my craft, that, you know, I had a very, very good chance on going far with basketball. But, you know, all of this was happening at one of the roughest times of my life because I was not only fighting my battle with my disease and keeping it a secret, I was watching my mother. And, you know, my mother was my mother and my father. And I was watching her, you know, lose her battle to AIDS and HIV, you know, which literally, when she died, transformed my life into that of an orphan overnight. It was the second week of junior year. And it really devastated me. I had lost the two things that meant anything to me, and that was basketball and my mother. I lost the basketball because many people don't know that neurofibromatosis, prior to the president changing the law, was a pre-existing condition. And, you know, up until 2010, my whole community, the insurance company had been getting away with deeming our tumors cosmetic. Even though they are the conduit to a sarcoma that is almost certain death in every case, when you have MPNST. But, I mean, we're very expensive patients. I'm at $4 million in 29 months. I get it. On the capitalism side, on the moral side, it's horrible because a whole lot of people have perished simply because they couldn't be covered. But what I'm getting at is the University of Chicago was doing a study in 1993 that my guidance counselor at high school and my mother were very excited because I'm finally going to get covered. For my likeness and my pictures, I would actually get an operation. There was a tumor on my left knee that was bothering me, but I had been dealing with it. But again, they were excited that somebody was finally going to do the surgery for free. But I specifically had asked my doctor, if I do this surgery, will I be able to play basketball and suit up by August 1st? Where I'm from, no matter what, you have to be suited up and ready to go to secure your spot on the team, and there are no exceptions. And my doctor kind of minimized. I really, at 16, didn't get the gravity of what neuro meant, nerves, and how important your neuro, your nerves are to jumping and just movement in general. And I went ahead and let him do the operation. And in a nutshell, I just wasn't who I needed to be by August 1st. Had to forfeit my spot on the team. And then September 13th, the second week of junior year, I lost my mother. So the two things I was getting up in the morning for had been taken from me in less than 90 days.
Yeah.
Hit the street, got recruited by a street gang. The very dark 8 or 9 years, I would use alcohol and drugs because I was D, and D didn't have problems, and D didn't share problems because, I had my pride and my ego.
Yeah.
And I would have these times of the year where I would fall apart, but I'd do it away from everybody. My mother's death date, September 13th, I would fall apart, get submerged in drugs and alcohol. Then I'd be okay to our birthday, which is December 21st. I was born on her birthday, and I fall apart again and get through those 3 days. Then I'd be good till Mother's Day. And then it'd be this vicious spiral. I could never get in front of the year because every time I think I'd have my stuff together, another one of these target dates would present themselves. And, in 2000, I woke up in Alexian Brothers Behavioral Health Center for trying to kill myself.
My, but what turned everything
the
most
around?
Amazing
thing.
What turned everything around? I mean, clearly you're not that person anymore.
Yes, that hospital stay, actually. That hospital stay, I don't know what this doctor saw in me. I know he sees people who come in combative and want to end their lives that are abusing drugs and alcohol all the time, but he made it very clear to me that because I was a harm to myself, and I was combative, meaning I was a harm to others, that he would take my rights away if I didn't participate in group. So he broke me at about 3 weeks, and that's only because he put me on the side of the hospital with the people who were talking to napkin holders. And, and he became very lonely, and I raised my hand for help, and it was through some amazing counseling sessions and one-on-ones that we got to the root of all of my pain. And it was real simple. I never grieved for my mother. I never grieved, ever.
Yeah.
There was never a grieving period, and I compartmentalized, and then I exploded. And then life was looking good for quite some time, but I had not returned to my doctor, even when I got my act together, because I was still holding on to the resentment that he lied to me about the severity of the operation when I was 16, because I felt like I would have went to, I had 6 scholarships on the table, possibly, a contingent upon me graduating and keeping my grades and continuing to play. I had opportunities, and I felt like if I could have just leaned on basketball, and not lost the basketball and my mother at the same time, I might not have had the same hard times. It might not have taken me 9 years to get my stuff together. It might only took 3 because I would have been submerged in school with the support system. But I say all that to say I did not see this man until 2012 when my neurofibromatosis had brought me to my knees in the form of extreme back pain. Got me to the hospital. Yeah, but I know you want to ask me something because I'll keep talking.
I know.
Talking,
well,
Karen.
I know
you've
got an incredible story, and we can't hear it all. So
I know.
I think you've given a really great background of where you're coming from, and you had many. You had 9 surgeries, high risk, and now you were given 6 months to live, and here it is 4 years later, and you're alive.
Yes.
And what
yes,
do you
ma'am.
Attribute that to?
I attribute that to my positive mindset, my plant-based revolution within myself, and ramping up my fitness and exercise regimen. I have a plant-based aunt that kind of introduced me. Her name is Lisa Mitchell, and she introduced me to the plant-based way of life early in 2012 because she had cured herself of some ailments, some life or death ailments as well, and made it very clear to me that if I continued on my bodybuilding, strength man, typical diet, whey protein and 40 pounds of chicken breast a month, 10,000 calories a day, it would expedite my death, like very fast. And I'm not going to lie to you, I was paranoid, and this is the first time I've ever really listened to her as it pertains to food. She's that aunt that would come to Thanksgiving and tell everybody that they're eating dead birds. Like, you get your plate and you run to the basement just because, you know, here she comes. But mm-hmm. I say that with a smile on my face. She's also the aunt that saved my life and painted the picture that I needed to see, you know, in relation to disease and the things you put in your mouth. So I attribute the beginning transformation to my Aunt Lisa, and then I got introduced to Master Vegan Plant-Based Chef David Choi. And then he kind of really wrapped his arms around me, adopted me as a third son, and just made an agreement. I will feed you, and I will push you up, push your star as far up. He's a Buddhist monk, too. I'm going to push you up. I just need you to spread this message and do a 360. And when you do that, I need you to help everybody in your periphery. So I have dedicated the entire rest of my life to advocacy, awareness, and the promotion of plant-based living. And Master Chef David Choi's teachings are real simple, that everybody has cancerous cells, every single one of us, but they activate in certain people's bodies for whatever reason, but the common denominator is cancer cells love acidity. And if you can manage to withstand the discipline it takes to remove meat, dairy, yeast, and sugar from your diet, you will not kill your cancer, because he doesn't believe in killing anything. If it's in you, it's a part of you, so you need to love it too. You're simply making an agreement with it. And he said this is a mind thing as well, D, because you can stop eating all the meat, but cortisol acid is just as bad as a pork chop. Now, I didn't really get that until I got it. And all I know is that if you type in my cancer, MPNST, malignant peripheral neurological sheath tumor, all you have to do is type in the acronym and the word survivor, my face pops up in the entire galaxy. There's few people alive, but they're on life support or in a hospital or on chemo. I do 200 pull-ups a day.
Wow.
I train for 6 hours. I'm in the best shape of my life. And the only thing I've done is ramp up my fitness, double up on my plant-based intake, and promote this positive mindset. That's it. That's
I love
my
it.
Secret.
I'm applauding you.
That is my secret. That's my
yep.
secret.
Isn't that crazy? So
it's
simple.
Hard to
so
believe,
beautiful.
But I am here. Like,
you're
and
here.
I'm not just surviving and hanging on. Like, I'm thriving. You know? And my mission, I believe, is to not diss modern medicine, but it's to let people know that they're, even if you're on chemo, that is very important that you strengthen your white blood cell count, your immune system. And the only way to do that is through earth-grounded food. Like, you're not synthetically going to rebuild your immune system. and it sustained. Right. You know, so I'm not the chemo basher. I didn't do it myself. I don't really agree with it personally, but to each his own. But if you do it, you especially need to get on a plant-based lifestyle more than anybody else to not
That's
only
right.
flush the toxins out, but to work on reestablishing the immune system the chemo has wiped out. Because, no, the cancer's gone, it's dead, but now you're going to die from a cold. I mean, you know, somebody sneezed on you. You touched something at the gym. Now you're walking around. I mean, and that's really what an AIDS patient is. They don't have an immune system. I mean, that's what chemo kind of reduces you to. And that's just my message, Karen, in a nutshell.
Well, that's a beautiful message. And, I mean, your story is incredible. And the fact that you're alive when most people who have this malignant peripheral nerve sheath tumors don't live. If that doesn't blow people away about the power of plants, plus a positive attitude,
yes, ma'am.
Because that's really important. You have to have that will to live,
right.
And you clearly
right.
have it. You know, you mentioned
right.
earlier that this original ailment that you had, neurofibromatosis, because of pre-existing conditions. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because for people who think Obamacare, the Affordable Health Care Act, is problematic, one of the greatest things it did was eliminate this awful
yes,
pre-existing
ma'am. Yes,
condition
ma'am.
Nightmare.
Yes, yes. I mean, I think we can all agree. We might have got some doctors to do 3 surgeries pro bono, but not 9. Not 9 9-hour operations. They just... It's just too much money. Everybody has their opinion about the president, but
yeah.
this is a fact. Had you not changed that little clause in the law, I wouldn't be here. And there's no
yep.
question about that.
Okay, so
no question at all in my mind.
This is something, it may sound a little trivial, but you said that the doctors or the insurance people considered this neurofibromatosis, the symptoms, these spots and tumors that you had, to remove them was cosmetic. And
yes.
I'm just wondering, here you are, a young boy, and you had them, and we're a very vain society where image is very important. So you must
exactly.
have had a lot of esteem issues to begin
yes.
with, because you had these problems.
Yes. Yes, I'm tumor boy. And this is why, so you wake up every day knowing you're tumor boy, but you don't even feel comfortable enough to own it and share it. So for the first 10 years of your life, they're moles. And they're,
yeah.
then, you know, they just more of them come. And then, no, they're not looking like moles anymore. They're looking like tumors. And my mother just happened to instill in me that I'm beautiful no matter what. But it's funny you say that, because I have an organization I'm founding called Cherie Inspires, named after my mother, because she was my inspiration. While she was dying from AIDS, she's in front of my high school with condoms, HIV prevention literature, and a megaphone trying to save the entire world in 93 when AIDS was the worst thing you want to say you have, period.
Yeah.
And so what my organization is going to do is grant wishes for my tumor kids, my introverts, my kids that often kill themselves. Like, our suicide rates
mm-hmm.
are upward to the 26th percentile, just because by the time, like, these kids live in a Google era. And if you Google what we have, it says nobody's actively looking for a cure. It doesn't affect a high enough proportionate amount of people. There's pain, there's cancer, and there's more drugs. And that's, I've gotten so many inboxes, emails, and people just reaching out in general. Like, I was really going to hurt myself, because I don't wish this upon anybody to wake up and feel like bees are stinging you all day, because that's what this feels like. Every tumor is on a nerve. Every morning you get up, it's like you're being shocked every morning of your life. And to a child that doesn't have a support system like I had, you know, it's no point to go forward. So for this community, I am their Superman. I am their hero. I am the guy doing what all of the doctors have told us is not possible for people with this condition. And what my organization aims to do is grant wishes to these children. We don't even qualify for most of these programs until our tumors become malignant. I'm not going to say any names or badmouth any organizations, but it's a lot of prerequisites to doing something for a sick child. And I don't think that's right. I don't think you need to have one foot in the grave to qualify to make you feel special for a day. So that's what I aim to do. And that's why I believe I'm here specifically for this group of people who have to die so everybody else can get the funding. We get that. But I refuse to quit there. I got a little platform. I got a little momentum. I got a little steam. And I'm about to, Karen, I'm trying to take it to wherever I can go to be that light for this group of people. And everybody else I inspire is a bonus.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions. One is, you mentioned you're starting an organization called Sherry Inspires. Is there a website or a way we can find out more about it?
We have just got the okay from the state, and we're waiting for the federal tax exemption. But, yes, D. Anthony Inspires, that's D-A-N-T-H-O-N-Y, inspires.com. If you check in periodically, they're revamping that site, but that's where all the information will be that would direct you to Sheree Inspires once we're fully up and running. But we've already got the state exemption. We're just waiting for the federal exemption, and then we'll be in
that's
full.
That's great. Well, maybe we'll have to resume this conversation another time when you've got that going and things are more active there. But the other thing I wanted to mention is, here it is, you're one person, you're one data point that shows the power of plant-based eating on a very aggressive form of cancer. And it's not, people like to qualify different cancers as different. They like to describe all diseases as different and identify them. I think they're the things that plague humanity in terms of chronic diseases, they're all the same disease, and people just express them differently. And you must know that plant-based foods are our first line of defense for prevention and for staying strong during whatever treatment you may need or choose.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I wholeheartedly agree with you. It was the beginning of nutrition, and, you know, it's either going to sustain us or end us. If we continue to contaminate the green hemisphere, it's over. Like, everything goes back to the plant. I just hope everybody wakes up before it's too late. Like, everything goes back to the plant. Everything.
That's right. Well, Dee, I am so impressed and so in awe. You know, I say this from time to time, but they come up with these percentages in terms of survival rates for certain diseases, and I think there are things in those numbers that aren't related to the disease itself. There's whether you have the love surrounding you or not, and how much stress is in your life, and whether you're affluent or poor. And there are so many things that affect your ability to survive a disease that we don't even realize. And, you know, you mentioned that you had a great support system, and that's huge. Plant-based foods and love.
It is, and it wasn't much. It was a single mother, you know, but it was enough. Like, she knew what to say. Like, I thought I was handsome, and I had tumors all over my body. That just was the power of her word. You know? She was amazing.
Yes.
She was an amazing woman.
Okay, D. Anthony Evans, you are Superman. You are awesome. I'm so glad you're out there, and the world needs you, and all those children that have that unfortunate rare genetic condition, they definitely need to hear from you. So thank you, and all the best with your future
Karen, and anybody that's looking to get in touch with me, I'm on Facebook at D. Anthony Trains, or just type in D. Anthony Evans in the search bar. On Twitter, I'm D'Anthony Trains. Instagram, I'm D'Anthony Trains. And the email is D'Anthony Trains, T-R-A-I-N-S, at gmail.com. That's D'Anthony Trains at gmail.com.
Thank you, D'Anthony Evans, so much. All the best to you. Live long
Thank
and prosper.
Thank you so much, and you have an absolutely amazing day and continue to be amazingly you.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. That was amazing, was it not? I mean, if you think you've got problems, this man went through an incredible journey, and through the power of plant foods, he is so strong. 200 pull-ups. Did you hear that? Amazing. All right. Let's move on because we have so much more to talk about. And I want to bring on my next guest. I'm really excited about this. We have Garth Davis, MD, the medical doctor of the Davis Clinic of the Methodist Hospital in Houston, Texas. He starred not only as a medical doctor, but he played one on TV in the hit TLC show Big Medicine. He is certified by the American Board of Surgery and is a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and a fellow of the American Society for Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery. Recently named a super doc by Texas Monthly, he has been featured in the Houston Chronicle and other outlets. Garth lives in Houston with his family, and he's the author of Proteinaholic: How Our Obsession with Meat is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. Dr. Davis, thank you for joining me today. How are you?
I'm great. Happy to be here.
Okay. Well, I was off in Costa Rica last week, and I brought your book with me and got to read it there. I have the heavy, it's a heavy hardcover, and you know, when you travel, you want to travel light, but I took this with me and it was worth it.
Okay, great. I'm glad you liked it.
And I'm also a fan of Howard Jacobson, who wrote this book along with you. So I'm glad you wrote this book. Number one, there have been a lot of people who've been preaching plants for the decades. I'm a vegan for over 28 years, and I've been following this subject for a long time. But we need more doctors that are preaching the power of plants, because we have this image of medical doctors. You're gods, and you know how to save us. And we need to hear this important message about nutrition from knowledgeable medical doctors. So thank you for that.
No, happy to. Yeah, doctors, they really, I kind of feel let down the public. It's not really their fault. It's the whole medical system. You know, it's not, you've probably heard this before, but Western medicine isn't healthcare, it's sick care. And doctors are really good at taking care of someone once they get sick. They're not very good at preventing them from getting sick in the first place, which is what I really want to do in the future.
Now, you had a transformation where you were preaching one gospel, and then through some sort of epiphany, you found another path. Can you just give us a brief summary of that?
Yeah, well, you know how they say, there's no atheists in a foxhole. People get epiphanies pretty easily once they get sick, and I had gone for a life insurance policy test, and it kind of failed. It failed to get the best rates because my cholesterol level was sky high, and I was hypertensive, and I had liver function tests that were elevated, and I had also gone to get my eyes examined, and I had cholesterol deposits in my eyes. And I was like, you know, this is crazy, you know, because I knew at this point, I was only 35 years old, and I knew where this was going to lead me. And I started thinking about it, because as I started really looking into health, because all I had thought about was what you usually think about as a doctor, which is, you know, how do I cure disease? What surgeries? What medicines? I started to kind of question what I had learned in medical school. And is there another way? And one thing that really got me to think that way was the fact that despite the fact that we spend more of our GDP, more money on healthcare than any other country, we've got one of the lowest longevities in the world. And so why not look at the countries that do it well and have good longevity and look at the cultures that survive? And what I found, no matter where I looked, was that plant-based diets tended to lead towards longer lives. And so I started changing my diet, and I changed my health and the health of my patients. And, you know, 9 years later, things are perfect.
Things are perfect. I like that.
Yeah, no,
well, good for you.
High blood pressure. Much more athletic. You know, I feel stronger, faster, everything. You know, 9 years later, I've aged in reverse.
Now, what boggles my mind is how many medical doctors don't have that epiphany. And they continue down the path that they were trained in and don't want to really acknowledge something so simple.
Well, you know, there's this kind of paternalistic view in medicine. First of all, you got to understand, we don't learn in medicine any nutrition. There's no talk about how nutrition ties into heart disease or cancer or longevity. We just, you know, in all my years of studying medicine, no one told me about nutrition. It just wasn't brought up. And I gave a talk quite recently to a group of endocrinologists, you know, reviewing the data that, you know, meat causes diabetes, and that, you know, a plant-based diet is better off. And they were fairly accepting. You have to be accepting of the science. I've got, you know, tons of science backing me, which my book is all about, the science. But one of the one guy said to me, he's like, okay, that's fine. It might be that a plant-based diet is better for you, but no one's going to go on it. So, you know, why even think about it? There's this view that no one will actually change, so why even bother? Like, no one's going to stop eating a cheeseburger, so let's give everybody Lipitor and just, you know, protect against it. And that's kind of the mindset in Western medicine is, you know, people aren't going to make lifestyle changes. And if they're not going to make – and really, if you think about it, you go to see your doctor, you get 15 minutes with your doctor. And that's not enough time for them to really counsel you on how to do preventative health care. And so they don't have the time. They don't think the patients care. And so they just don't bring it up.
And that's the big problem, because, and I've heard it so many times, everything that you've just said from so many doctors, but if the doctors changed and the patients heard it enough from their doctors, that would make a tremendous difference. Cause I'm sure you've experienced that.
Yeah. And so you know, groups like PCRM are starting to go to the medical schools and seeing if we could start getting this as part of medical school education. And that would be huge. If you could start affecting these young doctors' minds before they get out and have the dogma implanted in their brain, that would be a huge asset.
You mentioned your book's all about the science, and it is, and I want to say that it's very easy to read. So thank you for putting it in layman terms that people can appreciate and make sense of, because that's really important.
Yeah, that was really our goal, was to, you know, I there was just so much science, but I had to explain it the way I explain it to my patients so that that it's accessible, because I don't want to leave the science out. Otherwise, people think I'm just lying to them. But at the same time, I don't want it to be so boring that you're like, oh, this is horrible. So try to give people an idea of how to read the science and show what's out there.
And this is a big problem today with the internet, with all kinds of bloggers and people trying to sound like experts, and some of them writing in such a way where it does sound kind of impressive. We seem to have these two schools of thought where people are promoting whole, minimally processed plant foods, and then there's this other circle of people who are promoting meat and butter and all kinds of animal products, and a lot of people are swallowing it, literally.
Yeah, because, you know, that's, people love to hear good news about their bad habits. And you know, the funny thing is, and it's part of the reason I want to write this book, is I have got, you know, this huge experience with thousands of patients. It's not just me writing a blog. And I see these guys writing these blogs on the high fat diets and things like that, and they haven't treated a patient ever. You know, they've never put someone on a diet and then followed them for months and months and months. I mean, some of the top names that you come across don't treat patients at all. And that's ridiculous. They have no ability to test what they're saying in practice. The problem with these ketogenic diets is that you're going to have a good response early on. And so people will equate that early good response with this being a good diet, and that absolutely is not the case. You got to look at the long-term repercussions of doing so, and, you know, look around the world. Show me a society that eats a mainly ketogenic diet. There aren't any, and those that do get close have very poor health. And so, you know, look at the plant-based diet people. I mean, one of the longest lived cultures in the world are the Seventh Day Adventists in Loma Linda, California, and specifically the vegans in the Seventh Day Adventist community seem to be the healthiest of them all.
You're not related to Dr. William Davis, are you?
Oh God, no.
there is a medical doctor who is preaching a completely different diet and lifestyle.
I mean, that book, like, compare his book to my book. I mean, there's, like, just no science in that book. Very little science, lots of speculation, lots of straw man arguments.
Yes.
It's really – but, you know, written so that it sounds authoritative. But, I mean, how can you say that wheat is the biggest killer when some of the healthiest cultures in the world have eaten mainly wheat? And so it just it doesn't make sense when you look at it in real life and look at epidemiology. It just doesn't make sense.
Let's talk about the word vegan for a moment. You do not shy away from that word, and yet there are a number of doctors, medical doctors, who are promoting a whole foods plant-based diet who don't like to use the word vegan. Why do you use it?
Yeah, you know, I probably should shy away from it a bit. I mean, I use it
I love it.
Yeah, no, I do. I look, to me, being vegan is more than health, right? I mean, you're vegan not just for your health. You're vegan because of the environment, and you're vegan because of the ethics. And I think these are things that people should think about when you go to eat food. And so I kind of like that ethical, moral reasoning. And the other thing is I really like people – it's hard to just choose a whole food plant-based diet if you've been a meat eater all your life. So I think you really have to – part of convincing yourself, I mean, part of getting me to change was the fact that as I started studying it, yeah, it was good for my health, but just because something's good for our health doesn't mean we do it. I mean, people do bad things all the time for their health. But when you start getting all these other things in there, you realize the absolute cruelty that goes into a cheeseburger and the absolute damage as far as water and pollution and topsoil and all that kind of stuff that goes into eating a cheeseburger, it just makes it less palatable. And it could really help affect change if we start thinking in those broader terms.
Thank you, and I don't want you to give it up, so I'm glad you're using the word. I agree with you. okay, there was, you know, I read a lot of these kind of books, things promoting plant-based eating and all the science behind it, and even though if you just think of it from a really simple non-scientific point of view, to me it makes sense. I've been doing it for decades, but it's great to see more and more science, and the one thing that popped out to me that I hadn't really heard before or realized before was fruit. And what you mentioned is not that fruit has a lot of protein, but it has the building blocks of protein, the amino acids.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's not a complete supply, but it certainly is adequate. Look, I mean, you know, look at our closest genetic relatives, and they eat mainly fruit and plants and things like that. You know, a chimpanzee only eats meat if it's in a starvation situation. And so you obviously can thrive on eating, you know, mainly plants and fruits and things like that. But, yeah, you know, the fact of the matter is you don't just get amino acids from the actual fruit, but your body's constantly turning over your own body cells and recycling the amino acids that you already have in structural form. And so we have this constant labile supply of amino acids in our body. So it's very difficult for someone to become amino acid deficient. I mean, it would be really difficult and usually never occurs unless you're actually also calorie deficient. And so long as you're getting enough calories, you ought to be getting plenty of amino acids in order to maintain your body's health.
I love that you use the concept of recycling with our amino acids. That just made me feel very good about myself.
Makes you feel efficient. But I mean, look, you know, protein is important. And it's so important that nature has it everywhere, and that nature has created a situation where we recycle ours. And so it's just, you know, people don't come into doctor's offices protein deficient. You just don't see that. I mean, I got friends that are fruitarians, you know, raw vegan fruitarians.
Yep.
Eat mainly fruits, and they're the healthiest people I know. You know, they're not lacking. I checked their lab values, and they're not lacking protein. I checked, I don't know if you know Christina Fully Raw, the Rawfully Vegan website. She came in and we did a video. I checked her labs. Her protein levels were perfect. And I mean, that girl eats mainly, she basically eats fruit all day long.
That's amazing.
She's doing fine.
That's amazing. You mentioned earlier in the program about meat causing diabetes.
Yes.
And I don't think a lot of people know this or believe it or would be really surprised to hear this. Now, when did people start talking about how meat cause diabetes.
That's been going on for a while. I mean, the more we've studied diabetes, you realize that diabetes isn't a carb problem. It's a carb utilization problem. In other words, carbs aren't causing the diabetes, but carbs are a problem because you can't utilize the carbs properly. So the reason you can't utilize the carbs properly is because what we found in this concept that I talk about a lot in the book called intramyocellular fat, which is fat inside the muscle cells. So what happens is you eat a lot of fat, and there's certain amino acids that stimulate the fat to go into muscle cells. And when the fat gets in muscle cells, it interferes with the muscle cells' ability to form insulin receptors. And then if you can't make insulin receptors, then you're not sensitive to insulin. Then you eat a carb, and your blood sugars go high, and your body has to crank out even more insulin to try to get the sugar inside the muscle cell, and it can't do it. And, you know, that's the central problem, is the fat inside the muscle cell, not the carb itself. The high carb or the high blood sugar is the symptom, not the disease.
And I'm sure many people have their jaws hanging right now just hearing that.
Yeah, but there's been a lot of really good studies. I kind of go over studies in the book, the EPIC studies and things like that, that show that meat intake is definitely correlated with diabetes. And if you look at the Seventh-day Adventist studies where they followed Adventists for many years, they followed thousands and tens of thousands of them, and those that ate meat had a considerably higher rate of diabetes than those that didn't. In fact, the vegans had less than 2% of the vegans had diabetes. I don't even know how those vegans got diabetes, but I mean, you can't eat a lot of fat and junk food as a vegan, but 2% is pretty low considering that, you know, we're talking about in the next 20 years having 30% diabetes in the country.
Wow. Whew. Oh my goodness. Well, not if enough people get out and see your book and read it.
I hope
so. And understand it, right? Okay, yeah. Now you treat a lot of people who are overweight.
Yes.
And what are some of the challenges encouraging a plant-based diet? What are the biggest complaints or challenges you hear from your patients?
There's people bring up cost a lot, but cost is really kind of a BS excuse. Okay, so a plant-based diet could be very, very cheap. I give people, you know, diet plans and stuff like that that just uses, you know, canned beans and frozen mixed vegetables and frozen fruits. It's really affordable. I think prep time people bring up a lot. They have a hard time prepping, though, you know, if you're eating a lot of salads and stuff like that, it's a pretty easy prep. But I think really the biggest challenge for me used to be is that people were always like, where am I going to get my protein? I mean, that was why I wrote you know, people are like, I can't do that because I'm not going to get enough protein. So that's the main reason I wrote the book. If someone gets to the kind of point where I got, where I was like, oh my God, I am not healthy, I don't feel good, and I'm prepared to make changes, the changes really aren't that difficult. What I find is that people are actually kind of surprised how easy it is to eat this way, and absolutely thrilled with how great they feel after starting to eat this way. And so I don't really push, I don't say you have to be vegan or you have to be vegetarian. I just want people eating a lot more fruits and vegetables and beans and nuts and seeds and grains and a lot less meat and dairy. And I explain that all to them, and they tend to start gravitating towards the healthier food items after a while.
Now, when you made this change, your whole family was on board at the same time. Is that correct?
Immediate family. My wife and, you know, my kids have to kind of have to eat whatever she serves them. But, I mean, they were baby. Like, you know, when we started this, we just had our first kid. So they've kind of grown up vegetarian, and they don't know. I mean, they know different. They just would never even dream of eating meat. You know, kids really gravitate towards fruits and vegetables. We kind of train that out of them. But my kids are disgusted about the, you know, the thought of eating meat. They've eaten meat. They think it's disgusting. They don't want to eat it.
Okay. There's that one other piece of exercise. And, I was just kind of smiling because there's an article in the Wall Street Journal from yesterday, Sloan Kettering's quest to prove exercise can inhibit cancer. And, I'm not a big fan of Sloan Kettering here in Manhattan. I've had to deal with them, and I think they're really slow to come to some of the things that we've learned a lot about in terms of natural healing with plants and exercise. But exercise is important, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's a huge part of making yourself healthy. I mean, you've got to stress your body a little bit. And that stress to the body actually creates a stress response. And it's that stress response that's so helpful for things like cancer. So if you do some exercise, you generate free radicals, which sounds bad, but then your body generates the enzymes to fight them, and you get this thing called superoxide dismutase, which is a fancy word for a super antioxidant, and that's what prevents the cancers. But, I mean, exercise is so important for your heart. It's so important for your mind. It's so important for your muscles. It's so important for your weight. And so it just needs to be part of a healthy lifestyle.
Now, in your past, you starred in the hit TLC show Big Medicine, but you were preaching a different story at the time, correct?
Yeah, I mean, at that point in time, it was all about the surgery. There really wasn't anything to do with the diet as much. In fact, I wrote a book at that time called The Expert's Guide to Weight Loss Surgery, and in there I preached, you know, a high-protein, eat-your-meat-first diet, which obviously I've since learned my ways and changed.
Any chance of a new show like Big Plants or something like that?
You know, until there's a lot of marketing behind that kind of stuff, I just, you know, there's no big broccoli that's going to put a lot of money behind a show like that. You know, it's not like, you know, meat, dairy, and sugar that all have their, you know, very well-funded boards.
Because our word out. Sick care is all about the money. Yep, it's all about the money. Yeah. Well, Dr. Davis, thank you for writing this book, Proteinaholic, How Our Obsession with Meat is Killing Us and What We Can Do About It. It is outstanding. And
found out that Kindle is doing a one-month promotion of my book. And so if you go on Amazon, you can get the Kindle version for $1.99.
Oh, get it today. Absolutely. That's terrific.
Yeah.
And probably an easier way to travel to other places if you carry it on a Kindle than like what I did.
You can do it with a Kindle.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for joining me on It's All About Food and for writing the book and for doing all that you're doing and helping so many people.
Thanks, Karen. Enjoy being there.
Okay. Take care.
Take care.
All right, that was Dr. Garth Davis, the author of Proteinaholic. Again, I'm going to say how our obsession with meat is killing us and what we can do about it. Excellent, excellent, excellent. All right, we have, about 6 minutes left, right? And I wanted to talk a little bit more about Costa Rica. And when I was there, there are just some things that kind of stand out that like I said, you can learn from walking in these undeveloped areas outside of the cities where there's farming and some very simple houses. Some of them are just shacks that people live in. I love looking at the cows that are there, the cows that are grazing. They are thin. They're not as big and bulky as some of the cows we get to see here in the United States. Of course, most of the cows that are raised here in the United States, we don't see because they're hidden in factory farms or on feedlots. And the thing that really is profound is looking at these cows' udders, because you barely can see them. They're small and they're high above the ground. You know, if you look at the cows today that have been given antibiotics and hormones, the ones who have been given recombinant bovine growth hormone in order to give more milk, their udders have expanded to the point where they couldn't even feed their own baby calf if they wanted to, because the calf can't get underneath the udder. It is so heavy and so large and so close to the ground. And it's just kind of stunning and beautiful to see the more natural animal, non-human animal, of course, grazing peacefully. I didn't know what end they were going to have, because people in Costa Rica, as anywhere, drink milk and do slaughter animals for meat. But these animals looked a lot happier and a lot healthier and had very small udders, which was really, really refreshing. while I was there, I got to experience some of the local foods, and that's one of the things that I love about traveling. And we can get a lot of these foods here in the United States. They're just a lot more expensive. I like to eat fresh and locally, and I have to admit I had my fill of papaya, local papaya. And one of my favorite foods there, if you've never had a chance to try it, is something called the peibais. Peibais, I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it correctly. P-E-J-I, peibais, B-A-Y-E-S. It's a fruit that is related to the coconut, and it's much smaller. It's like they grow in clusters on these thorny trees, and they're about the size of a plum, and they come in red and yellow and green, and what people do is they boil them in salty water. And I remember the first time I had them, they were just incredible, and every time I've had them since, they're incredible. But they have a flavor like chestnut and pumpkin, and after they're cooked, you peel them and you just eat them. They have a little pit in the middle, of course, that you discard. But it's a really wonderful, rich food. And so exciting because you can't get them here. I haven't seen them. And such a treat when I'm there to try them. So if you ever have an opportunity to try the peibais, I highly, highly recommend them. So good. And very, very filling. I've heard that they're like 200 calories each, so they're pretty dense. Yeah. So I hope you read our What Vegans Eat post from this past week because there's some fun stuff there. And we have some new recipes up, as always. And you should check them out, too, at responsibleeatingandliving.com. There's an event coming up this Thursday in Brooklyn called Food Bites. You might check out foodbitesummit.com, and that's food, B-Y-T-E-S. And I'll be going there and reporting on it and letting you know about it next week. But it's a conference that promotes all kinds of new food businesses. They're not all vegan, but a lot of them are, and it's going to be fun to see what some of the new products are out on the horizon. And there you have it. We've come to the end of the program, and I thought it was really phenomenal. Really impressed with my first guest, Dee Anthony, and Dr. Davis's book is outstanding. So I hope you get a chance to pick up that Kindle version for $1.99 and share it. We need to be spreading this message of plants for so many reasons. Thanks for joining me and tuning in love today, and have a delicious week. Bye-bye.